You think so. Karomi, I shall make it. Ritam, truth. Tut, that promise. Na, not. Bhavet, will become. Pralambhanam, cheating. Padam, step. Titiyam, the third. Kuru, just do it. Shirshni, on the head. Me, my. Nijam, your lotus feet. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj said, O best personality of Godhead, most worshipable for all the demigods, if you think that my promise has become false, I shall certainly rectify matters to make it truthful. I cannot allow my promise to be false. Please, therefore, place your third lotus footstep on my head. Purport. Bali Maharaj could understand the pretense of Lord Vamanadeva, who had taken the side of the demigods and come before him as a beggar. Although the Lord's purpose was to cheat him, Bali Maharaj took pleasure in understanding how the Lord will cheat his devotee to glorify the devotee's position. It is said that God is good, and this is a fact. Whether he cheats or rewards, he is always good. Bali Maharaj therefore addressed him as Uttama Shloka. Your Lordship, he said, you are always praised with the best of selected verses. On behalf of the demigods, you disguised yourself to cheat me, saying that you wanted only 3 paces of land. But later you expanded your body to such an extent that with 2 footsteps you covered the entire universe. Because you are working on behalf of your devotees, you do not regard this as cheating. Never mind, I cannot be considered a devotee. Nonetheless, because although you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, you have come to me to beg, I must satisfy you to the best of my ability. So please do not think that I wanted to cheat you. I must fulfill my promise. I still have 1 possession, my body. You have taken my wealth, but still I have my body. When I place my body for your satisfaction, please put your third step on my head. Since the Lord had covered the entire universe with 2 steps, one might ask how Bali Maharaj's head could be sufficient for his third step. Bali Maharaj, however, thought that the possessor of wealth must be greater than the possession. Therefore, although the Lord had taken all his possessions, the head of Bali Maharaj, the possessor, would provide adequate place for the Lord's third step. Yadyutama shloka bhavan mameritang vacho velikam suravarya manyate karom ritang tanna bhavit pralambhanam padang kitiyam kuru shirshnime nijam. Bali Maharaj said, O best personality of Godhead, most worshipable for all the demigods, if you think that my promise has become false, I shall certainly rectify matters to make it truthful. I cannot allow my promise to be false. Please, therefore, place your third lotus footstep on my head. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In text number 1, Shukadeva Goswami says that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead was superficially seen to have acted mischievously toward Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was fixed in his determination. Considering himself not to have fulfilled his promise, he spoke as follows. And then today's verse that we chanted together, he actually tries to make his words make things right, not being able to tolerate things coming out any other way. So there are some things that occurred to me as I was preparing to speak on these verses. One is how Krishna deals with people, specifically how he deals with his exalted devotees, as opposed to how he deals with the rest of the population, and how the devotees deal with Krishna while he's dealing with them. Today we get a little glimpse of the mind of Bali Maharaj as he's in this very awkward position. What's going on in his head while these things are going on in his life. So the first thing is that it says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was superficially seen to have acted mischievously toward Bali Maharaj. So superficial means not really. It looks one way, but it's actually another way. Krishna is not, and this is something that I've heard many times from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, that Krishna is not in the business of messing up his devotees' spiritual lives. He may deal with you in a tricky way. He may deal with you in a way that is hard to take. But he's not in the business of messing with your spiritual life. Everything that he does, as Prabhupada says in the purport, it is said that God is good, and this is a fact. Whether he cheats or rewards, he is always good. So how is this? He puts his devotees, especially some of his greatest devotees, into some of the greatest difficulties that we read about in the Bhagavatam, Mahabharata. The greatest devotees sometimes get put in a very difficult circumstances, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all these great devotees, and then it gives him an opportunity to glorify the devotee later on. The verse, yasyaham anugrinami harishye tad dhanam shunai, takes away everything, leaves a devotee with nothing except Krishna's shelter. That's all they've got. And then that might seem to someone who's not prepared or ready or determined to accept that benediction to be a little harsh. You go through that and it feels not always so pleasant if it's happening to you. But what's more harsh, really? Is it more harsh to deal with someone in a way that will get them out of a situation that's terrible, quit more quickly? Or to let them rot in the situation? Because if you're in material existence, you're in a diseased condition. You're spiritually sick. The whole place is like, it's wrong. It's just, your spiritual health is not good if you've got a material body. But just like if you're sick, if you're not feeling well, like last year I remember I was just not feeling well. Sometime around March, April, there was something that I ate that was just wrong. And I knew that whatever it was, it had to leave me, you know, one way or the other. But I didn't want to become violently ill, so I was, you know, trying to stay calm, but it didn't work. Until I was violently ill, I wasn't able to get better. And that's often the way it is, you know. People are afraid of throwing up. But once that happened, I was like, oh, life can go on. So material existence is like a disease of the soul, but we want to play it cool. You know, we don't want to go off in a mad rush towards transcendence and risk getting the mercy of Krishna in some way that we might not think we're ready for. We're just like, oh, you know, I'll be a religious person, I'll be nice. But no, sometimes Krishna has other plans, like he has here with Bali Maharaj, and we see how Krishna deals with Bali Maharaj, and we also see how Bali Maharaj is ready to accept that blessing. What's going on in his mind? So when Krishna, he has two basic purposes, right? He says he has two purposes for coming to the material world at all. One is to deal with his devotees a certain way, and one is to deal with non-devotees a certain way. And with the devotees, he comes to deliver them and to show his pastimes, and to the demons, he comes to he comes to annihilate them, or to kill them, or whatever he does, to for them to cease to exist. Although not even the demons can cease to exist. I remember when Jagai and Madhai were hassling Lord Nityananda to a severe degree, Lord Chaitanya was prepared to kill them. Lord Nityananda stopped him and said, no, the Kali Yuga is for killing the demoniac mentality, not for killing the body, but killing the demoniac mindset. So for the demons, when Krishna comes, he gives them the chance to hate properly. Like one time Prabhupada was saying that if you have to hate, in other words, if you're just a hateful person, that's the way you got to be, then you should hate Krishna, because if you become a big enough demon, Krishna will come personally and kill you, and that'll be good for you. So, and then for the devotees, Krishna comes to show his pastimes to give them the chance to love properly. Because otherwise, there's so many things that can bewilder us, and we think they're so beloved. But when Krishna comes, that's the lovable person right there. So those two purposes is what Krishna does whenever he comes, for whatever reason. And depending on the person, Krishna will deal with you in a specific way. Like we're reading about Bali Maharaj. Vamanadev came as this little miniature brahmana and expanded himself as the universal form, kicked the covering of the universe, then shrank back down, and then arrested Bali Maharaj with these snakes, right? That's Krishna's way of dealing with Bali Maharaj. You read the way of Krishna dealing with Bhishma Dev in the battle of Kurukshetra, when Bhishma was doing his best trying to provoke Krishna to action. Krishna jumped off the chariot, grabbed some chariot wheel that was broken, it's running at Bhishma Dev like a lion. It's like, I'm going to kill him. And Bhishma was so pleased. He's like, all right. You know, this is the way that Krishna is dealing with Bhishma Dev. Krishna deals with the gopis a different way. Like if Krishna did the universal form thing with the snakes, with the gopis, you know, they might not have liked it. You know, there's an old song, I don't like spiders and snakes. But Krishna's got his relationships with everybody. And in this case, he's dealing with Bali Maharaj in a way that we can understand that Bali Maharaj is feeling great ecstasy, even though he's in this position that you know, who would like to be in. It says that, Bali Maharaj is fixed in his determination, considering himself not to have fulfilled his promise. He spoke as follows. He was feeling, what is it like if a superior, someone whom you recognize as a superior, gets angry with you? You feel weight. You feel the heaviness of the situation, you know. And so Bali Maharaj is feeling this very keenly, that he feels like, I am Bali Maharaj. My word is as good as my body. I have given my word, and something's wrong. I wasn't able to fulfill it, and now I'm in big trouble. Because, you know, God himself is appearing. The universal form is there. The snakes are there. It's a tough situation for Bali Maharaj. It's not a party. And so, but how does he react to this? He doesn't feel himself cheated, even though he knows, you know, Prabhupada says that he knows that Vamanadeva came just to cheat him. But he doesn't feel cheated. He doesn't feel cheated at all. He's as opposed to the rest of his people there, you know, the people in his army. They saw, Vamanadeva, and they're like, our chief is in trouble. We've got to help him. We've got to do something. Get him! Never mind that this being just expanded himself to the limit of the universe. Like, yeah, we're going to get him. So why the difference between these two ways of seeing Krishna's acting? There's Bali Maharaj is reacting one way, and all the other guys are reacting another way. And there's two different natures, divine and demoniac. There's two different kinds of people. Basically, there's two different kinds. The demoniac people, what's going on in their minds? I'm perfect, powerful, and happy, and the devotee, What is the devotee thinking? I'm drowning in an ocean of sorrow. I'm almost like a dead man. Sometimes I say that if somebody asks me how I'm doing. I'm either perfect, powerful, and happy, or I'm drowning in an ocean of sorrow. There's two different ways of being. And the question is, which one are we when Krishna deals with us in a way that makes us go, ooh, you know, are we going to fight? Are we in a fighting mood? Or are we, you know, in a submissive mood? What is it? And sometimes it depends on our carbohydrate level, how we react to what Krishna is trying to do with us, for many of us. But the interesting and tricky thing for us is that in Kali Yuga, you know, as opposed to other yugas, the demons and the devotees are in the same head. You know, previous yugas, at least you got the demons in one neighborhood and the devotees in another neighborhood, and you know. But Kali Yuga, it's all going on at the same time. You know, it's difficult for us. So that's why I was saying that here we get a glimpse into the mind of Bali Maharaj. This is a long time ago. He's not a Kali Yuga personality. But what is he thinking at this time? And you can see what he's thinking. That he thinks that Lord Vamanadeva is, well, he reasonably thinks that he's in big trouble. You know, just like the tax collector comes and, whoops, you have no money. What are you going to do? He says that, I cannot allow my promise to be false. This is what he says. Like, I cannot, I just can't allow this to happen. It's not going to happen. It's like you're a parent, you have children, you have to feed them. There's no not feeding your children. You know, and so for Bali Maharaj, there's no not being truthful. You know, considering his dynasty, considering his own position as a devotee. I'm just not going to let this happen. He values his word as much as he values his life. And so this kind of trait, this personality trait, is kind of going out of style in the Kali Yuga. We tend to weasel a lot of the time. And so he's in big trouble with God. He's made a promise he can't seem to keep. Krishna's arrested him, displayed his universal form, arrested him with snakes. His army's, you know, killed your army. And so what has he got? What's he going to offer? What can he possibly give? And there's a couple things I came up with. I used to think that a living entity in the material world has one thing that's his and his alone, and that was his suffering. Right? Because constitutionally we're all part of Krishna, we're meant to serve him and happiness and love. But once we come here, it's like, I don't have to serve you, I've got my own suffering. You know, I've got that, and nobody can take that away from me. But even that's not true. Right? Because that's not our constitutional position. Anandamaya Bhyasad is where it's, you know, there's no other constitutional position that says that we can hold on to whatever suffering, you know, like every miser is proud of his penny, you know, every creepin is proud of his suffering. What we've got is our bhakti. That's the only thing that we have. You know, that's ours, you know. That's our own thing. And so Bali Maharaj is in a tricky spot here. And so he's thinking in terms of, what can I give so that my promise to Vamanadeva doesn't become false? And he thinks of, oh, my head. Like, sometimes I think when I forget something, I think, oh my gosh, if my head wasn't attached, I'd forget that too. But Bali Maharaj is remembering that, oh, he's got this one thing. And so that's what he decides to offer to Vamanadeva. Of course, this is called into question later on by his own wife. It's like, well, we'll read about it. I won't give away the story, but that's what he comes up with. And I was thinking about a couple things, that Vamanadeva comes as a result, apparently, of the prayers of Diti. You know, she performs the Payavrata, and he comes because there's an appeal for him to help the demigods on behalf of Indra, whose kingdom has been taken away. And so, can you please come and help? And Krishna says, I'll come. And then we read about the mindset of Vishnu as he's deciding what he's going to do. He's considering how to fulfill his promise to come. And then this whole thing happens with Bali Maharaj, with little Brahmana and expanding, covering the universe. And I was thinking, he didn't have to do all that. You know, he wasn't, in one sense, he, like, I wanted to say this, that Prabhupada gives some of Bali Maharaj's mindset here. Because you are working on behalf of your devotees, you do not regard this as cheating. So this activity of making his begging for three steps and then making the three steps cover the universe, nobody was planning on this at all. This is his own idea. You know, they were just thinking, usually what happens is there's some war and the demigods either win or lose, but they're hoping that they would win because Vishnu would be on their side this time, and they would win, and then, you know, they would be reinstated. But Krishna goes about it this very tricky way, because he knows that because of the blessings that the demons had received from the brahmanas, that war was not an option at that point. So he thought, to circumvent that, I'll come as this little tricky brahmana. And so when Krishna comes, every time Krishna comes, it really is his play. He's not coming to fulfill some contractual obligation he has to the demigods or anybody else. He comes because he wants to. It's like he wanted to come and glorify Bali Maharaj. He wanted to do this for his devotee. But it's almost like he was waiting for an excuse to do it. And Diti gave him an excuse by performing the Payavrata and praying for him to come, and there's a whole political turmoil going on. So then he came. And he does this so frequently. Like when he comes for Prahlad Maharaj, all the demigods are praying, please give us relief from this guy who's like meningitis and the fever of the universe. Just come and kill him. So Krishna, I'll come and kill him. But how does he come? He comes in such grand style as this half man, half lion. It tears him apart, you know. Completely beyond what anybody can imagine. And I was thinking about this too. It's like, Urukrama means the person who performs uncommon acts. And whatever Krishna does, it's uncommon. You can't figure him out. You can't plan for a Lord Nrisimhadev to appear. You can't plan for Lord Vamanadev to appear. How are you going to plan for these things? This is one feature of Krishna's greatness, that he's coming to blow your mind every time. Whatever he does, that's one of the features that it has, is that it ought to be beyond our scope of imagination. And then it gives us something to talk about. You know, because with Hiranyakashipu or with any of these demons, you know, every day, thousands and thousands of people die by relatively easily explainable medical causes. But who talks about that? You know, there's no leela involved in that. But when somebody comes in the form of a half man, half lion and disembowels you, you know, what's the coroner going to say about that? Well, it looks like a half man, half lion came and set you on your lap, ripped you to shreds. You know, or the Sudarshana Chakra, you know. It looks like a fiery, spinning, razor-sharp disc just severed this guy's head from his body, chief. Yeah. It gives him something to talk about. You know, so this is why Krishna is known as Urukrama, because it gives us something to talk about. And he comes in this way, specifically to deal with Bali Maharaj in this apparently cheating way, because Krishna, and this is one thing that Prabhupada really tried to drive home to all of us, Krishna is a person. The Supreme Person is a person. And he is not going to act according to anybody's concept of what God should be. He is who he is, and he does what he does. And our business is to learn to deal with that and to work with him, you know, because he may come in our lives at some point just to keep things lively. You know, to keep the relationship alive in a way that we might not be ready for. But if we are accepting of the fact that Krishna's got his personality and he's supreme, then that's our good luck. Then we're ready for anything. That's the devotee's motto. So we're ready for anything, because he puts his devotees into difficulty. He puts his greatest devotees into the greatest difficulty. Haridas, Thakur, Kunti Devi, Draupadi, the Pandavas, Arjuna. You can name anybody from the Mahabharata or the Bhagavatam that Krishna deals with, and he deals with them in a very severe way. And why is that? Because he severely loves us. And because the devotee severely loves him, there's some severe transaction, you know, in their relationship that people talk about for millions of years. And you never know, Krishna might be planning to do something severe with you at some point, and are you going to be ready? Oh, and the other thing is that I was thinking about the point of Krishna appearing to act mischievously. Only Krishna can get away with that. And I was thinking about this, Nagaraj Prabhu was giving a class yesterday. Why is it that Krishna can act mischievously and get away with it, and I try to act mischievously and I go to jail? And it's because Krishna is the greatest. He's the chief. He's in charge. Not only that, but everything he does is out of genuine love and affection. I do something, I might be out for my own gain, not considering the wants, needs, rights of other people, and therefore I should be punished. But Krishna, everything he does is just to extract affection from us. You know, whether he's stealing butter or killing the demons or whatever he's doing, everything he does is because he loves his devotee and he wants the devotees to love him back. And it's just one of his charming features that he'll act in an apparently mischievous way just to get more love out of us. Because if he acted according to our idea of, you know, standard morality and niceness, how exciting would that be? You know, wouldn't have much to talk about. There would be no Urukram. Anyway, thank you for listening. Hopefully y'all have something to add or maybe some questions. Jai, yes?
You mentioned before that when Krishna acts, you know, let's say mischievously against us, we can choose either whether we're going to accept it or not.
Yeah.
And we know that the demons, the great demons,
mm-hmm.
throughout history or throughout his lila,
yeah.
have chosen to fight against him.
Yeah.
And but if we don't consider ourselves a demon, or if we're at least trying not to be a demon, is it proper, and you know my answer about this, is it proper to fight Krishna if we think he's acting mischievously against us?
You can try. You know, give it your best shot. See what the results are, and then, you know, okay, that didn't work, or maybe that did work. You know, you have to see. Everybody's got a different relationship. I know you're more of a kind of person.
I wasn't always. Well, I'm going to share a realization, and this is something that I read somewhere, and I realized that it's something that I needed to apply to it, because for a long time I felt like Krishna was trying to, like, pound me into a powder, and I was just going, you know, and feeling miserable about it. And then I realized that maybe what he wants from me, if I'm going to be honest with myself, is that I'm a demon and I should fight him, you know, and not just accept whatever gets thrown my way. And I realized, and it was sort of like, as soon as I started thinking that way, I realized that that was putting me more in contact with Krishna than I was when I was just, before I was avoiding him because he was going to pound me. And now it's like, all right, I'm not going to take this lying down. And by that contact, it seemed that I started to feel less and less that he was trying to pound me, and more like he was just testing me, or you know, giving me a challenge, or wanting to see what I would do in response to circumstances in my life.
That's right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Krishna is very curious to know what you're going to do.
But I had nothing to lose anyways, you know.
So. Right. Trivia ground for me.
This is a little tough one. Bali, we know he's an exalted personality, and you know, he's actually Mahajan. But yet he's taken the cause of the demons. You know, I mean, he's and not only taken the cause, but he's leading them. I often wonder, well, why is this so?
It's his job. It's his job. He was born in a certain family, had certain responsibilities. He considered them his grave family responsibilities. So he was trying to act responsibly in the material world. And internally, he was a devotee. That's the best way I can understand it. Who is it? Mahatma Prabhu is giving class on the the Sanskrit for the Bhagavad Gita, that whether if someone commits the most abominable actions, he should be considered sadhu manye. He should be considered a sadhu. So we have on the surface the activities that we do, and somebody might even do something you think is just horrendous. But if in that person's mind there's still the determination that yes, I have going to be Krishna's devotee no matter what, then you know all kind of things might go on in that person's life. But what's the ultimate equation? The ultimate equation is that I'm Krishna's devotee. Krishna is the supreme. You know, I may have some kinks to work out, but I'll try to work them out. You know, so that's the only way I can understand it. You know, Prahlad Maharaj and Bali are in a certain dynasty, so there it's just a family business. Demons Inc. Dhamaraj Prabhu.
Coming back to the first question, one actually has to be very qualified to be a demon. But to be a devotee, you simply have to allow the devotees to give you their shelter, or the guru just simply allow. You don't really have to be qualified per se. So to be a demon is a really tough one.
Yeah, it'd be a good one. Yeah. One more thing I just wanted to say is that in the Bhagavatam, and specifically in this verse, we get to hear, I don't know what commentary Prabhupada's working with here, whether it's Vishvanath Chakravarti or Sridhar Swami, but he's given the internal dialogue of Bali Maharaj, that what he's thinking, what's going on in his head. Oh, well, the universe is one thing, that's the possession, but I'm the possessor, so possessor is greater than the possession, so I still got something here, take my head. So there's two things going on. There's the situation and the story. Is that Vivian Gornick? There's the situation and the story. And very, very enlivening for us when we get to hear both things. Like the situation is he's arrested. There's snakes around him. He's feeling embarrassed. He's going to hell. You know, that's the situation. But the story is he's an ecstatic devotee of Krishna. Krishna is acting with him in a way that's specific to his Krishna consciousness, and he's ready to give anything, and that's his bliss. You know, and so we're getting two things. We're getting the situation and the story. And that's always nice when you read recollections of devotees, for example, that have spent significant amounts of time with Prabhupada. Oh, this is what's going on in Prabhupada's daily life, and this is how he's dealing with me, and this is what's going on in my head while Prabhupada is dealing with me in this way. And this is it's ecstatic for devotees to hear, because there's all kind of things going on in our head all the time. And to hear what's going on in devotees' heads is it's instructive. It's nice. Madan Mahaprabhu, did you? Okay. All right. Jai. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.